Beginning to Gate, episode 252. We're talking Stargate Atlantis, the gate team here. My name is Mitchell, if we're going to go full name, which I don't think I've ever done on the podcast before, and maybe not ever again. Matthew.
Happy birthday for last week, Mitchell.
Hey, thanks so much.
And happy birthday for the week before, Brendan.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Call me Dickface.
Dickface is also here.
I thought you were going to say call me Cumpig.
That too.
That's taken.
Yeah,
That name is trademarked.
Yeah.
We apologise to the proper owner of.
Yeah, Tim Dillon, you bastard. You stole it.
You f***ing cum pig.
Season 3, Stargate Atlantis, episode number... You know what? This doesn't really help because my bloody book... It hasn't got a booklet. This goddamn... I brought this not
unlucky
quite fat
13.
Boy.
That's why I don't bring mine in, because it doesn't have a booklet.
Doesn't have it. You know what? It's been that long since I brought my own DVD that I'd forgotten about it. Yeah.
Hang on, mate.
Come
if
on, Bezos.
Brendan would just learn to bring his in every week.
No, it's...
We'd be fine.
Or do you have the same deal? Do you have the same...
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, oh. So no one's
but,
got...
But we've
Atlantis only came out in that, as far as I'm aware.
But we've read a booklet this season from Atlantis, haven't we? I'm
I
sure we
no,
have.
No, I don't know that we have. Mate, you're relying on me to do it, and so no.
I feel like we have.
Okay.
Jacob with a K. he sends me messages all the time where he's like, just sends me a message... from a podcast from season 2 and just adds to it like I remember what was said.
I love that.
And then I have to defend myself.
Yeah. I don't even know what we said last week.
Exactly, yeah. I love that about Jacob. When you tell me those stories, like the line between being a good friend of yours and a big fan of the podcast is almost invisible, that line. Like, it's just, yeah, friendly banter into, yeah, but it's like in season 3, episode, 27, when you actually said that and this happened, and you're like, oh, man, no. That
I mean, all my closest friends are obsessed with me, so... Just like Mitch, when he just like, you know, 9 o'clock on Wednesday night, he sends me a message. Do you want to do a podcast with me?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
You want to talk about X-Men?
You want to
talk about
X-Men and Star Wars?
Mm.
Like, yeah, of course.
And then we don't do it.
Yeah.
Episode 13 of season 3, Irresponsible. The team here of a great warrior with stories of defeating both the Genii and Wraith and seek him out in hopes of making a new ally. But when they learn that this great warrior is none other than Lucius, they believe he's up to his old tricks again. This is a Joe and Paul episode, yeah? Because I haven't got that episode in front of me, but I believe that was one of the first things I noticed about this episode. And what I love, obviously, they're off Earth in almost every episode of Stargate Atlantis, but when they do write an Atlantis episode, they can't get off the base enough. Mm. SG-1, they love being on Earth. Atlantis, they love getting away from Atlantis.
I'd love to get away from this episode. This episode is so bad, even my DVD player and PC didn't want to play this episode. Literally, it would play the first bit.
Yeah.
Up to like where Lucius is like getting the injection, where Beckett is like testing his blood, and then it would freeze. My whole computer would freeze. So I have no audio for this episode.
Mm.
And then I went and put it down into my DVD player and exact same thing. I would have to skip to about halfway through the episode for it to then actually kick in. So there's, sorry, 3-star Jacob, there's literally a whole like...
There's no way.
There's a whole like 6 minutes in this episode I literally could not watch because my every device in my house that has a DVD player function was like, absolutely the f*** not.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I'm the first timer, but I'm the only one that's been able to actually watch this in full, but... Because I didn't. How long since we've seen Lucius? Like 4 episodes? Like it's been nothing really,
it
right?
It was episode 3 of this season.
So it's, 10.
It's literally been 10 episodes. Way
and
too
so that's
soon.
And like, that's 20 of our weeks in the podcast, really. I mean, it's giving a couple of doubles here and there or whatever, but realistically, well, it's not long enough that I should have forgotten
him. Yeah.
I didn't remember his name. So when the synopsis I read before I watched the episode, so yeah, Lucius Lovin, I'm like, I don't even know who that is. So the idea of me as a reader reading that going, oh, they see him again. I'm like, I don't know.
See, and this is the time where you need the bracket saying Richard Kind.
Yes, he really did. But then it was its own surprise when that happened. And I was like, oh, Tim. Oh, really? Like we're already catching up with him again. And then being told who was coming up in the episode was ruined for me by the credit, because like I didn't feel the need, I didn't feel like I was going to have anything. Kolya, and it pops up and says Robert Darby as Kolya. I'm like, damn it! I would have loved to have found that out by John Shepherd yelling Kolya at the window. That would have been amazing.
Yeah,
but that didn't happen. So yeah, it felt like a weird character to revisit. Even if we would have seen him in like episode 2 of season 2 and then we don't see him again until like the third last episode of maybe season 3 or even season 4, you'd be like, really? We're going back to this guy? Like, we didn't get closure on him as a character.
Yeah. I feel like the most irresponsible part of this episode was committing it to film. That was... like, I love Richard Kind, love Robert Davi.
Yeah.
But this was just a miss on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the village felt, you know, very generic. I mean, a lot of these villages
and stuff. Well, that's the village from Revisions.
Yeah.
So we've seen the... Actually, it's funny, in the audio commentary, because Martin Wood directed this, which you wouldn't expect, because he normally directs some really good stuff.
Well, Joe and Paul write some great episodes too. So
through that's the one from the... Like, they had the link, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm, yeah. Martin Wood, through this whole audio commentary, was like, I'm so sorry.
Oh, really?
I'm so sorry.
It's like, Jesus.
Because apparently this episode, originally when it was written, it was meant to be shot in Border Town, which is the set they use for like 100 Days and like Beast of Burden back in the day, where it's more like a Western, muddy thing. That's why there was the gunslinger thing at the end between John and Collier. Yeah. That was supposed to be like in a big, long, like Western style.
Which would have been so on the nose, obviously. Because, I mean, when that happened, I'm like, well, yeah, this whole episode has been a cliche Western story. Like,
yeah, just in the wrong setting.
Yeah, where, you know, these people, they show up, there's this guy who's got all these stories, and then other people come into the town to take over, and it's up to this sort of small ragtag of people to...
The bar needed the swinging saloon doors and stuff like that for Richard Kind to walk in.
I'm glad that didn't work out, because I don't think we needed it to be as obvious that we're having a Western-inspired
episode.
None
of the stuff made sense. And like, even, Martin Wood was like... Well, you know, like he was pointing out, so he was like, well, this doesn't make sense, because it's like they're talking in the bar at the start. Lucius gets up, walks away, like leaves. Then Beckett walks in and says, oh, no, he doesn't have the drug in his system anymore.
Mm.
So then they walk out to find him. And that's when like the quote unquote, air quote, raiders come in and do the thing. And even Martin Wood's like, well, that doesn't make sense. He couldn't have set that up in that amount of time.
Mm.
But because we had so little set to shoot on...
Mm.
We couldn't make it look like that thing where they're attacked by the raiders. They're supposed to be halfway back to the gate by that point. So it would have given some like off-screen time for Lucius to have set that up. But everything just kind of just bang, 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 because it's like you're shooting inside the building, you're shooting outside the building in the courtyard.
So when you say the raiders, the first raiders that like were...
The ponytail guy.
Yeah, right. See, I actually didn't mind that, because I've sort of taken that as that was something that he had organized prior to the scene with the SGA.
I thought that too.
And because you get that scene... was the scene with the woman in the bar that same scene that preceded the Raiders scene? Because he obviously had that woman come up. He's like, hey, why don't you come over to my place? She's like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
Why? I'm the town hero. Yeah, but that was ages ago. So I've almost like... That or he's got it in his diary, like this is going to happen like every 4 months, something's going to happen. Or the bar wench said no, he's organised it, and then he's had that scene with the SGA.
I believe that's how it was written, but then obviously Martin Wood still being a very good director was obviously, able to fool both you and I, where it was like, Brendan's watching the episode now on his phone.
Don't remember it.
So it's like I had the same idea as you. I thought, that's something that Lucius had set up before, like, Shepherd's team even got there.
Yeah.
But apparently the way it was written, it was like, no, because of, like, what the barmaid was saying, it was like, it's time for another one.
Mm.
But, so it was quite funny listening to Martin Wood just, like, shit-canning his own work the whole episode, just going, and here's another reason why this doesn't work.
Yeah.
Here's another reason why this doesn't work. It's like, and this is the same room as this. It's like, we've literally shot every square inch of this set.
Mm.
But apparently, the Border Town set was, like, in such a state of disrepair that they couldn't even really film on it without, like, putting them over budget. So they just had to pivot and chose, went back to the Revisions Town because it was sort of shootable.
I just love how high and mighty most of the SGA team were around Lucius. Like, you had Beckett sort of standing behind him at times just giggling, like, at how ludicrous he is. I'm like, let's not pretend you weren't ready to suck him off at any given moment that he would have requested it 10 episodes ago.
Oh, like, let's not pretend that
he did. You know, at least Ronan was angry at him and just wanted to hit him because of what he'd done. And
right,
God
I'm
knows
up
what
to date made. Again.
Okay. no wonder, you know, Ronan, God knows what he was made to do. But, you know, Beckett was just sitting there like, I can't believe people fall for this, you know. And then you've got, at least they're able to move on from that and go, okay, what else are you doing? And,
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they did let him go last time. Mm. So it's like they can't really hold on to any of those emotions from last time because it's like, well, the drug wore off and they let him go.
Yeah.
And he's banished from his village.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not like he got the raw end of the deal in the end.
Yeah.
Although now he's got two chicks fondling his feet.
Well, he had more than that in the first one. He had like three wives or whatever in the first
one. Yeah.
So... I did like.
Man, does he have a foot fetish or
maybe they do? Wood? Maybe. what I thought was interesting,
like friggin' Karen Tarantino.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah. See, Cooper thinks that he's Kubrick. Martin Wood thinks he's Tarantino, so he's got to put feet in all the shots as much.
I thought
as
it was
can.
Funny that Lucius kept using the line. He said it, I think, at least twice in the episode, where he's like, "Oh, so I said to the Wraith Queen, if you were 20 pounds heavier, you'd look like my ex-wife." And then, like, later on, he says, obviously my wives were stunning. Yeah. You know, just had to correct himself with that last moment.
But
I'm
just,
like, well done.
Telling fat jokes, and then he's referring to the bloke. The bloke with the gimpy wrist. He's got the gimpy wrist. And I'm just like, there was just a couple of, like, real sort of key moments and key words in there that I'm like, yeah, you're not getting away with writing that into a script today. Like, having fun at, like, fat joke or, you know, not that it was a disability reference, but just,
the last episode he was in when they hit the drowning boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Beautiful lady. No, him behind her. The hard R behind her.
Lord. Speaking of hard R's, that ponytail guy, like the Raider guy with the ponytail, you guys might not get this reference, but if you remember from Good Will Hunting, there's that iconic scene where Matt Damon...
The apples.
The apples. Mm. I got a number. How do you like them apples? Well, in one of the Jay and Silent Bob movies, I think it might have been Jay and Bob Strike Back.
Yes.
They'd make a joke where Good Will Hunting 2 is being remade like 20 years later and like Affleck and Damon are there doing it and they bring the apple guy back and he's got this dodgy ponytail and it looks exactly like this guy to the point where I had to look up IMDb to make sure that it wasn't the same actor. I was so convinced it was the same guy.
Who was the guy in Jay and Silent Bob, the ponytail guy? Was he a name? I feel like...
Nah, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. I'm just... Yeah, he's probably not
Eric Stoltz?
Yeah, it does look like Eric Stoltz. I think Eric Stoltz in Butterfly Effect had that same ponytail.
In Pulp Fiction. He's the heroin guy.
Yes, of course.
Poor bastard. Imagine that's his whole career. He could have been in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Like the most popular trilogy of
He's like a really, really good... he's a pretty prolific director and stuff now.
Yeah, but he still thinks about it.
He's he's doing...
But he did Mask. He was in Mask with Cher. He was the guy with the munted face in Mask in the 80s. He's had a great career.
No, he hasn't.
He played Taya Leone's brother in Madam Secretary. Yeah.
He's in Rob Roy.
I mean,
Roy,
how does it get any better
fiction,
than that?
Bloody... what did you say? Before that?
Butterfly Effect.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
He is good.
But
great stuff.
But you assume that Back to the Future would have been as big a hit as it is.
No, it's just more of that.
With
like,
Eric Stoltz.
Well, the thing
true.
Is,
they, you know
it
I mean?
Wasn't going to be, and that's why he got sacked. But it's just like, oh, imagine if I did get, if that was, all the success was the same.
Yeah, but
except
it was me
instead of
that shake it boy.
I was going to say, well, at least Eric Stoltz could go, well, at least I can sign my own name, wipe my own ass.
Jesus.
Michael can shake his own dick.
I reckon if he had
Do
like
we reckon
a top...
it's Scott William Winter? Sorry, I'm back on ponytail.
I'm just thinking of like top three or you know, top five even people that have like still had Will Smith had an amazing career.
Could have slapped Chris Rock.
But he turned the role of Neo down to the Matrix at the time because he was on an upward like the late 90s for Will
you know,
Smith.
You know what he wanted to do instead? Wild Wild West.
That's right. Oh, yep.
That's the how you
that
like them
really
guy.
Does look like the guy from this episode.
I thought that was the CSI guy.
Scott William Winters is his name, is the Apple guy.
CSI Vegas or whatever it's
called. Oh, yeah, Caruso. It does look a little Caruso-ish,
Oh, yeah, look at that.
From this
look,
angle.
At his, look at his credits. His credits are Good Will Hunting, The People vs. Larry Flint, and Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Bullshit. Clark it was him.
Clark was his character name.
That's hilarious.
Oh, not the guy from Atlantis.
Oh, okay.
It's such a... like we're talking the last couple of episodes, if people were showing up for the last time. Now we're talking big characters and whatnot. Collier, he's been a recurring character.
Yeah.
And like I like the actor. He's appeared in some big films, some iconic sort of performances for me, especially as a Bond fan. He's one of my great Bond villains. And then he pops up in this.
What movie
like
was that in?
License to Kill, the second Timothy Dalton one. I might even, I'll play my favourite line.
Love the music.
he finds his girlfriend having an affair with a bloke, and he goes and sits on the bed next to them both naked, and he says to the girl,
"What did he promise you? His heart. Give her his heart."
"No. No, Franz. I didn't mean any harm."
"It's all right, baby. No te preocupes. We all make mistakes. Your escapades are getting more creative."
"Por favor, Franz."
"Not a word."
That's nice.
It's cold.
That doesn't even sound like a Bond film, to be honest.
Oh, it's the cold open. That's the first scene of the film.
Mad.
And he's a drug guy. And so he's not even like a bloke with aspirations of, you know, world domination or crippling governments. He's a drug cartel leader. Like, and he just happens to kill the friend of, or, you know, attempt to kill the friend of Bond. And Bond takes it personally. And I saw that scene. That scene I saw when I was 8. I'd watch like Beethoven or some shit on TV, and then in my room. And
Beethoven 3's on, guys. Haven't seen the first two, but.
And then next up, License to Kill, and I'm like, "Oh, watch this." Never seen a Bond film, obviously. I'm 8. And then I watched that, and I was horrified. So I've always been scarred by the acne scarred man of Robert Darby. You know, then he shows up as one of the Johnsons in Die Hard, and he's a bit of fun.
Play it, Mitchell.
Loves a bat. Loves it.
You got to get a That's One for that.
Which one, Die Hard or Bond?
Take your pick.
Okay, well, I haven't got sound effects of Bond, so I'll just give myself a
That's One.
Yeah. Fair enough.
What I'd love you insert here is the only Bond reference I know, which is, I think I've sent it to you probably 6 times over the last 10 years, is the three nerds from Buffy fighting over which is the best Bond.
Yeah.
And then the third, like the really, really lame one, like he's like the curly of the curly Moe and Larry. I like Timothy Dalton. He just gets smacked over the back of the head.
Ah, see, I love Timothy Dalton. Doesn't get enough respect.
They're obviously fighting over Roger Moore and
Roger Moore. He's played him for the longest. Scottish
sandwich guy.
Scotch on the rocks.
Nice to see your pusher.
I must be dreaming.
Look up my kilt.
So, like, yeah, him coming back, and this is Collier's goodbye from the show. Seems like it's like, "Oh, we're going to tape you on to the second Lucius Lovin episode." Really?
Yeah, he felt like a tertiary character. Yeah. Like, it wasn't a Collier episode with Lucius in it. It was a Lucius episode with Collier.
Yeah.
And the tone was all over the place. Like, given how, like, you look at Collier's last episode was when John was being fed on by a wraith. And that was the first time in Atlantis I was like, how the fuck are we going to get out of this?
Like,
how is John going to get his life back? And, you know, there was a serious episode, and then this was just all like frothy and light, and you were just like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah, because when Collier comes in, you're like, this is serious.
It's serious.
But what I did like the banter between Lucius and him, though. Like, yeah, it wasn't like A-grade comedy, but it was just, it's just fun to see Collier, who's so serious and so confident, and Lucius is just like,
yeah,
I do what I want around here. He's just like, what the fuck?
I do kind of wish there was a little more, I don't know if depth is the right word, but just like Collier is always so calm and calculated and nothing phases him. So even like I would have loved for him to be really perturbed by Lucius or find Lucius fascinating. Like I wanted something different because Lucius is someone that Collier would just, like he tried to do with Ponytail Guy, would just murder him straight up. He's like, I don't have time for you, but he couldn't. I mean, he could have. He could have just buried him or drowned him like they were planning to do. But he couldn't.
He did try. As soon as he walked in, he's like, "Get out of here! These people are under my protection." See, and he's like, "Bang!" Like no words. I love that he. I'm like, I want Collier to be that.
Yeah. So I would have wanted. I almost wanted it to be kind of a Collier retrospective. It's like Collier's never been challenged this way before. Like, he respects John as an adversary, even though they want to kill each other. They respect each other as, like, you know, quote-unquote warriors, where it's like Collier would never, ever see Lucius as a warrior, and the only reason Lucius is this obstruction is because of the personal shield. So I would have loved for Collier to have, like, tried to do some kind of alternate approach, but there wasn't enough time.
Yeah, he would find that fascinating.
Yeah.
For him, a fascinating
character.
It's like,
how would Collier react to someone as absolutely grating as Lucius Lovin? But he can't just put a bullet in him and move on with his vendetta against John. So I would have almost liked to have seen more of that. But I guess there just wasn't enough time, wasn't enough meat in the script where Robert Darby just had to play Collier as normal.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't, and then got a really lame death at the end. It was very anticlimactic. And also, and even Martin Wood realized very, very terribly shot. Because they have their little, you know, standoff, you know, in the their Wild West shootout where they shoot from the hip. Who's behind Collier?
Oh yeah, everyone.
The entire Atlantis team. John's shooting from the hip, so his aim's not very good. If he if his gun was just like a centimeter either way, he would have shot Taylor or Ronan or McKay.
That's what made it way more badass. Beckett. The idea that even like while they were sitting there like, do I not? Sort of sitting there hovering over the gun. He was like, if I do,
do it.
I've got to not miss, otherwise I'm killing one of my four teammates. And he was still like, yeah, I can get this done. And like you said, shooting from the hip too, and I'm like, that's a badass moment from Shepard. Yeah.
Yeah, a few snap zooms would have been nice.
Yeah,
right into the eyes as they squints.
I reckon there was a part where they were tying his feet up. Don't you reckon that this like he wouldn't be able to get tied up? With the shield?
There was a lot of inconsistencies there. Like at one point, the shield's active and he reaches into his jacket pocket to pull out the money bag to give to Ponytail Guy and things like that.
Where Rodney couldn't get away with that.
Yeah, the only time it was, I think, cleverly done was when all the Raiders and Collier had Lucius in the bar, like in that scene before you realize that there's just the campiest stick of dynamite with the fuse, you know, under the table. Everyone's being served drinks. They're all being served steins of beer. There's one served to Lucius, and Richard Kind at no point picks it up and drinks it because he couldn't because his shield was active because otherwise the guys would have killed him.
Yeah.
I took it as like the even the taking out of his pocket, like as, you know, what's reaching into his jacket or his own hands. His hands got the protection on it. It's sort of like... Like, I didn't have a problem with that. And even with a drink, like him holding that drink, would that have not put the protection thing around?
Remember, Rodney couldn't do it when he had that personal shield.
Yeah, you'd have to go back and watch, like, episode two or three or whatever it is. And there was a lot of, like...
Well, even at the end
Rodney was
back,
worried about not being able to wipe his own ass or take a shit. You know what I mean?
Well, even when they were walking back to...
he's like, I don't even want to think about other bodily functions.
We're talking about how his shit would just fill up to his knees.
Yeah.
That's right.
You got to talk about Poo Planet. You got to wear a poo suit.
Yeah.
It's walking around. It's like, well, you get some brown pet. Oh.
You should say, it smells in here. Like, it's really bad.
Bring back to Jay and Silent Bob from Dogma when there's that shit demon that comes out of the toilet. Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I think, to your point, both of you, that when they were walking back from the gate that was taken over by Collier's men and they were trying to come up with a plan, it's like, well, why don't you jump on my back? And that's not going to work. Like, it's not going to protect you if you just sort of attach yourself to me. So it's like, well, then, yeah, that would rule the beer stein out, just being able to touch something else. But then even the jacket, I thought, okay, they're like, clearly the women were giving him a foot rub. That was working. That was fine. But
was it active then?
Well, no, because that was before Collier showed up. That was just our team and Lucius.
But I just took it as like something. I took the whole thing as something he never switched off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, apparently in the audio commentary.
Well, yeah, because Rodney couldn't take his off, right? Did they explain that in this?
Lucius was in more control of his. He could. Because remember.
Why?
Because it's a bad plot. Because you got to remember at the end, he gives it to John.
Yeah.
And John survives, you know, being shot by everybody. So, you know, Lucius has more control over his, I guess maybe because it's filled with more energy or he knows more or I don't know.
Or he has better, like, does he have the...
He got the gene therapy.
He got the gene therapy, that's right, in the last episode.
Yeah. In the commentary, Martin Wood said something about they actually had a conversation about, like, at certain points they were going to not have the light on his thing to show you that it wasn't on, but they didn't want to have to telegraph it too much where it would power up, power down, power up, power down. So they kind of just let it do its own thing.
Yeah, okay.
So, which I think, confused the plot even more. Mm.
I would have liked it if Collier, after realizing he couldn't shoot Richard Kind, is that they did bury him in a grave.
Yeah.
And then, but like, I feel like if you had that shield, it lets air in. So I think it still would let air in. Like he wouldn't get... Obviously, you wouldn't get
you wouldn't choke
the dirt in your mouth.
Mm. Yeah.
The air would still come in and then he climbs out.
Mm. Well,
you know what I mean? And comes back as like a zombie thing. And they're like,
what the f-? Well, I thought it was clever though, because Collier did have that line where he goes, well, you would survive like the weight. The weight wouldn't crush you. Like the weight of you know, 6 feet of soil wouldn't crush your body, but you would suffocate.
And yeah, but he doesn't know that.
Yeah, that's true. He's just, you know, making it up as he goes along.
Kill Bill it.
Yeah, I mean,
Lucius just kill Bills it. And just,
if Uma Thurman can climb out of a six foot grave.
It was just such a cold threat too. Like he's like, you know, we're going to bury you. And, you know,
the drowning was cool. I like the drowning.
Yeah. But he's like, you know, the weight's not going to kill
you. It's weird
that
didn't he push him in the water though?
No, it was a snap cut to him being brought out of the well the first time.
The barrel of water.
Oh, sorry, yeah, the barrels. And then he's like, oh, yeah, see, it protects you, but you still need to breathe. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you kind of, it's kind of useless now because.
Yeah. Maybe they're just, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I felt like if you have a personal shield like that and a bullet doesn't deflect, why would someone's hand pushing you move the shield?
Well, yeah, you know I mean, same
that's
way
an
when
interesting point.
When people come up, would punch him in the face, and that wouldn't move him. So, like, if he
wouldn't
didn't want to be moved, why would he be moved?
Yeah,
and like the water's fine. It's like, yeah, okay, I get that. That might escape through if it's designed that the elements will. Like, you got your water. Like, obviously, the air's got to come in for him to breathe. But yeah, surely, if he didn't want to be moved, because otherwise, once that happened,
and
I'm
then
like,
if you're suffocating from the water. Then you can't.
Well, no,
you can't drink.
He wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, he wasn't suffocating from the water. It was just there was no air.
No
like,
air.
He wasn't actively taking in any water while he was being drowned.
That's what I would have thought.
There was
just
no oxygen for him to breathe in.
But there is oxygen in water. That's how fish survive. Right?
It filtrated out.
Well, if only the shield was for fish.
I get because like, for the splittest of seconds, like
that's a bad design if you fall into a puddle. And you fucking die.
Hey, I mean,
you suffocate. Yeah,
you can pass out from one too many beers and pass out and drown in an inch of water. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You don't need a shield for that.
But I mean, like, you can drown in an inch of water, but like, he could get weighted boots and fall into the ocean and he wouldn't drown in the ocean. He would just suffocate from no air, which is like crazy. And
that's what I
loved like about that threat was that it wasn't even like, I'm going to bury you and you're going to die. It was like, I could bury you and the weight wouldn't kill you, but your lack of oxygen, it's a very fascinating device you're wearing. Like he was threatening him with that.
He was actually
more so out of interest in it from
cool
a science base. And then it like at the end that was the fire and he comes out sort of like as if he was cooking, but he wasn't smoking. He's like, this device fascinates me more and more every time. And I'm like, I like that you're not menacing when you're saying that, but I'm actually more scared of you at the fact that you're just fascinated by this.
Yeah.
And weirdly at no
and you
point.
You know that you're going to win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
what it was. Weirdly at no point did Collier go, I want that. You'd think once he encountered Lucius, given that for the longest time, like he's like, I know John's here on the planet somewhere, but I don't know where. He's eluding me. So if I was Lucius, if I was Collier, would be like, I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm going to commit every resource I have to trying figuring out how to take this thing off this guy so that I can wear it and then I will absolutely win against John. You know what I mean? Considering that every time we've met Collier, it's, oh, he wants jumpers. He wants Atlantis. He wants, you know, he's
he wants the upper hand on all these things.
Yeah.
He wants Atlantis.
Here's this, you know, this ancient shield staring at him with this annoying fucker in, you know, and he did nothing about it.
I wonder if he could go through the iris. Probably not. Like the shield iris at Atlantis.
Yeah, probably not. But it would be, like you would think, okay, well maybe both of those shields are on like the same frequency.
Yeah.
So you could, like his shield would disrupt that shield and he could just walk through it. Yeah.
But then he's still in molecules, so.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, there would be enough.
Reintegrate.
Yeah, because the shield and the. Actually, that's interesting. If you're wearing the personal shield and you walk through the puddle, would you actually be dematerialized or would you just walk through the other side of the puddle?
Oh, my God. And you just fly through that.
No,
the wormhole.
I just mean you just...
Like in Origins.
We fixed Origins. She was wearing an ancient shield the whole time.
Good work, Catherine. You did it.
I love that you played that audio because that leads into the one piece of audio I was able to grab for this episode that I figured we really need to discuss. Joe and Paul know better than this.
Oh, no.
Look, at least my hero is human. McKay's is Batman.
You son of a bitch.
Batman's human.
Is he just one of those people? I mean, you should know. You absolutely should know.
Yeah.
But I think he means a real life person.
John was saying his hero was Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But it's like, you're a writer. You should know semantics.
And say, not, at least my hero is real.
Real, yes. Yeah.
Is a real person.
He's a real person.
Not human. Like, yeah. You don't say, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I thought you were going to pull up like the other, that mutual friend of ours that used to work here at the station, James, and he was a big Superman guy. He couldn't understand Batman's not a superhero. And I'm like, well, he is. He hasn't got superpowers. I'm like, oh, if you're going to get technical
Tony Stark.
Like that. But yeah, well, I don't know.
We should reach out to him and see what he thought about that line from, was it BVS or was it The Flash, where The Flash was like, what's your superpower? And he's like, I'm rich.
Justice League.
Yeah. Yeah, we should ask him about.
Yeah,
about
yeah.
And he'd be like, "Not his superpower." And he's a fucking genius.
Well, as Rodney pointed, is it
I
Rodney,
think they said something like he has a 200 IQ or something.
Yeah, right.
And he's the greatest detective in the world.
Yeah,
and also super rich.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right. This is where this is like for me peak Rodney. I don't know what it is. Everything he says, I'm like, I love this guy. Like, especially next week, we'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, even like the idea that a guy that's so reality-based, you know, right, it's tangible stuff. You know, he doesn't like any of the... I can't imagine you'd be able to sit down and really talk to him about faith and God and things. It's like, no, what can I reach out and touch? You know, beyond the SG-1 stuff, of course, but what can you reach out and touch? What's real based? And he doesn't have time for anything else that's a distraction from achieving a goal and making himself better and more famous and more well-known and loved. And that his hero is Batman. Like, I get that he loves him because he's a smart guy, but that he would devote enough of his time, even as a child, but then retain it as an adult to go, yeah Batman's my hero.
And also, and his hero,
and he's right.
Superpowers, he's genius.
Mm. Yeah, if anything, you think McKay would be more of a fan of Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
who wasn't allowed to allow someone, or wasn't about to allow someone like Superman and his abilities to get in the way of a guy whose superpower was his brain.
Yeah, like Lex Luthor is to McKay as like Superman is to Shepard. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I just couldn't, like, when they got back to the gate and, you know, Collier busts through on the mic and says, hey, the gates, my men have taken it, so you better just come back, otherwise I'll start killing your friends. Now, if he believed it, that's why he went back, great. But if he was close enough to the gate that he could have went through, grabbed a jumper, like the team back under Collier's captive said that he would do, I in that moment went, oh, well, just get old mate Lucius to take off the device, give it to Shepard, he's already carrying around his machine gun, and just walk up and kill all of Collier's men. Done, go through the gate. Come back with a puddle jumper and, you know, you've fixed it. You're done. Mm. And they're like, no, we've got to go back. And they spend all this time on the way back. I mean, for the audience's benefit, but also there was a lot of time devoted about, no, we can't. Oh, can we build a tunnel? Can I swing from a clock? No, I can't do
that. Oh, all the loose.
Can I? Yeah, all the different plans. And even Shepard's like, that's not going to work, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what are they trying to divert us to? Because the obvious answer is to give that thing to Shepard.
Yeah. So according to the commentary, the episode was short, and that was all improvised.
Okay, see,
that
took
was all added
it
on the day. That,
the scene where Lucius goes into the townspeople and like inspires them to inspire themselves.
Yeah,
that for me, I feel it probably only went on for a minute, but that to me really dragged on, and I was like, oh, this is the scene that got lengthened because the episode was short.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've ever felt that way before. Like in any SGA or SG-1 episode yet, have I, as I've been watching it, identified, and you're telling me now I'm wrong, and I'm like, yeah, that's fine. It was the other one that makes just as much sense, but maybe because it was our two main, you know, two lead actors that I didn't really notice it as much.
Yeah.
But,
well, it was funny
also
stuff.
One of them.
Yeah.
It just felt like, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is just, I get what you're trying to go for. And it was funny too that Lucius was like, hey, it's not about me. You've got to do it yourselves, guys. You've got to do it yourselves. And they're like, yeah, we can do it ourselves. Well, hang on.
And then they don't.
Sometimes you need me though. Like sometimes you do need me. So I kind of like that. He's like his ego got in the way of him doing what he was supposed to do. But the big reveal that, oh my God, Shepard's wearing the thing. And I'm like, cool. he should have done that 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
When he was at the gate and he could have went through and gotten a whole platoon of people and brought back three puddle jumpers.
It's I've got written down here my very first note, good to be king 2.0.
Yeah.
Like it's just the lamer version of that. All it needed was that one brunette chick from Good to Be King going, Archon, Archon, go, Lucius, Lucius. Like, yeah.
With that top, yeah, please. You listened to the audio commentary, Maddie. Was there anything... And to explain why Carson was in this episode?
Yes. So apparently that was to save time because if it was just the four of them.
But that was short.
Yeah, I know, right? But it was just to save the process of, okay, if the main team went there, realized it was Lucius, then they would have had to have been a beat where they sent for Beckett. Yeah. To then come later. So they just went, oh, we'll just write it so that he comes with them.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. I know. I thought the same thing. It was stupid.
Yeah, I was like, why is Beckett here?
And then that stupid line he had where they're talking tactical stuff. And then Beckett was like, well, if you want my heartfelt recommendation. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Go steal some shoes, you stupid idiot. Like, oh. All we need for the worst episode of Stargate ever is just Landry and Beckett together.
Beckett's fine.
Oh, no, I can't
stand Landry and Beckett. Weir you don't want.
How dare you?
How annoying was Weir in this episode, Mitch?
She had like one line at the start
didn't
and
even
that
need
was it.
It.
And you know what? I think we may even
don't
just have
you
to.
Dare.
Maybe we use her line, one line in this episode. No, I just say we use it every time. Mm. Even if we just, every time we have an Atlantis episode.
Okay.
We just use it as some type of cold open. Just to,
it's
just
better than the Terminator audio.
Just for Brendan, just this one. Dial the gate.
Yeah.
And it goes into a little Stargate bed. It's fine. So we can just have
love
her
it.
Cold. Dial the gate.
Yeah.
Why?
Every time Brendan.
So that I could get that
why
reaction.
Why would you
from
do
you.
That?
No, just for that.
Every time Brendan and I start to have an argument about we up, Mitch plays that.
Yeah, that's
and it's
it.
Us entering
no,
the argument.
John. Hey, don't. Yeah, we got the Johns.
That's a wrap it up, boys. You know, yeah. It's this. It plays this.
Can't
yeah,
replace
no.
that.
Yeah, that's a random invoice. Dial the gate. Oh, sorry. Bring it back. If, or maybe when we go off on a tangent non Stargate stuff, we go dial the gate. It's like, okay, bring us back to Stargate.
Yeah, we're being the wet blanket calling
or
us
it
back.
Can be, or it can be whoever wins the argument in your eyes and you play that. Like
ooh.
If Maddie's convinced you more, you can play
oh,
the
just,
wee
oh,
one.
It'll
right.
be the new version of Reese, your father made you wrong versus you stupid son of a bitch thing. Yeah.
But that was one person could be two things. Here it's two people can only be one of them could be one thing. Yeah. Was, oh God!
If I make a good point, it's John. If you make a good point, it's Dolly Gate.
I don't want that kind of responsibility.
Actually, I have to find
it's
it.
Just for fun.
Jacob did recommend something the other day. We need to bring back the Mitch.
Oh, yeah.
We need to use that. He said we had to use that for something too. He gave us a great idea for that.
I start going off on a tangent.
No, that's what we need. You're drifting. Trust me, if I had control over that button, the amount of times I'd be able to play that would be fantastic. I noticed something weird. The guy that was drowning Lucius had a different uniform to everybody else. A, it was weird that the Genii were back in the uniforms because I feel like in the last Collier episode, wasn't Collier rock around like a big long like black trench coat and they were all just like wearing civilian gear now because they like weren't officially working with the Genii anymore.
Yeah, they were rogue units.
Yeah.
They were rogue Genii.
But
favorite.
Then this time they rock up and they're all wearing the old school Genii uniforms for some reason.
Yeah.
But they're all kind of that weird green color and have kind of that coppery brown piping around everything, like the highlights.
Green.
Like the buttons and the... Yeah, you know, it's like a really deep, deep navy greeny gray color. And then, like, all the piping is kind of like that orangey, coppery sort of color.
Yeah, it's like a Tok'ra.
Yeah, maybe. But then the one guy that was drowning Lucius, all his piping was yellow. It was really weird. And I was like, why just him? It didn't make any sense to me.
Might have been it was like, he was, you know, not probation, but he was like...
Oh, yeah, like a ring.
He's
in. Was that the ugly ponytail guy?
No, because he didn't wear a uniform at all, man, because he was like, they were like their own little band of mercenaries or whatever. That they did say they used to be like Cowan's elite guard or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But then when...
he's got a gold trim.
Yeah. But then when old mate...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that does really stand out now that I'm looking at it. Yeah.
I guess because I was watching it on my like commuter monitor up close, you know, when I was, I watched it that way to grab audio and stuff. But yeah, it just stood out to me. I was like, why is he wearing yellow and everyone else is kind of orangey brown?
It must be the lieutenant or whatever, second in charge.
Yeah, just
first prime.
Hello, boom.
Welcome to Stargate, people.
It's just a weird random sort of thing to throw in, you know? Yeah. I didn't get that one.
He's the first prime of Collier.
That makes sense.
Now, how do we feel about like his emergence? Because as he says about wanting things, whether he's wanting weapons or his end game is to take back control away from Redeem.
Yeah.
And Co. He wants to take that back. It's his people. He wants to take ownership and leadership again. That's his end game. And whenever we see him pop up, it's something to do with that. He wants information. He wants technology. He wants to kill Redeem in the last episode. Hand him over or I kill one of your people. Whereas here, okay, it was kind of a means to an end, but really the only reason that he came out of hiding was to kill Shepard. Yeah. And I like that. Like, I like that there's just this one guy that just pissed him off so bad. It's actually worth
Atlantis.
The risk.
He had it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He literally had it.
And that's the weirdest thing. The whole reason we started having, you know, battles with the Genii is because they wanted to steal the stuff that we had so that they could fight the Wraith in a different way than we fight the Wraith.
Mm.
And now it's kind of just devolved into this. Collier doesn't seem to care about it anymore. He still, like you said, he still wants all our tech and he wants all these things. He wants a jumper, all these things. He still wants to kill John, but he wants to like kill John so that then he can go back to killing the Wraith. Like,
Feel it's just about power for him. He just wants as much as he can get.
Mm.
But it's like when we met him in the Storm in the Eye, like he didn't seem like the kind of guy that wanted to usurp the throne.
No,
of
he was
the
a
Genii.
Patriot, right?
Yeah, he was doing it for his people.
Yeah.
Well,
because they're native to the galaxy, when he thought they had a right because they were the highest pecking order of left in the galaxy, which in some respect I could agree with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Daniel Jackson found the eighth chevron, says eat my ass.
Yeah, exactly. and, you know, McKay exists in this galaxy, so clearly he's not the smartest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it just felt weird because it's like, okay, he was serving Cowan when he took control of Atlantis in the Storm in the Eye. I totally buy all the, you know, the axe he has to grind against Shepard. But it's like, okay, so once he kills Shepard, then what? Then he's going to go and try and kill Redeem. And then he's going to, like, if he does have, you know, I can't see him wanting to lead the Genii. He'd probably put another, Muppet in charge, like, as the, as the figurehead in charge.
Yeah.
And he'd be pulling the strings behind the scenes. But it's like, but then he'd still just go back to trying to get back to Atlantis to steal all the ZPMs, ZZPMs, and the jumpers and all these things to give them a tactical advantage to kill the Wraith.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very much has... Because remember, it was like, I guess the second time... Because the first time we saw Collier was the Storm in the Eye. Then the second time was the Brotherhood when we were like down in the pit trying to find the ZZPM.
Mm. Yeah.
And all that kind of thing. So it's like they were after that as well.
He's been in some good episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I think the last one was probably the weakest. Well, not this one, but probably this one.
Oh, the one Wraith
before
one.
Out of all of them, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess it became more about John and the Wraith. And I guess moving forward that, you know, that's a thread that they pick up. But it just sucks that he went out this way.
Yeah.
Apparently Robert Darby wasn't really happy either. He was like coming up with ways. He's like, well, here's my thing on how Collier survived.
they didn't need to kill him off.
No.
I don't feel.
No.
Well, not, yeah, especially in that scenario.
Yeah, like why, like. And they didn't say anything in the commentary about, you know, obviously Robert Darby still wanted to be doing this. Not like he was becoming unavailable to them.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand
as much as I hate the Genii, him being kind of an offshoot of the Genii, he's much more better than Redeem. Redeem's like boring as f***.
That's all, because that's all the political intrigue kind of stuff, whereas Collier was always... just he was his own thing. He was unpredictable. You didn't know what his true motives were, and that made him a really great villain. Maybe they just got sick of being like, well, he can't get away every time. But I mean, why I feel not? Like given the option.
Apophis did.
Yeah, exactly. They did it for what, five seasons or whatever. Yeah. I just think given the option between this episode and the last time we saw Collier, I would have preferred that Collier got killed by the Wraith. Then
that would have been better, the more poetic.
Yeah.
Even if it was, even if John didn't get to do it,
or even if John had a chance to, kind of, I think because John probably would have rescued him. But even if it was like,
what if Collier was the one that the Wraith fed on to get the energy to then put it into Old Man Shepherd to give him, you know?
Yeah, don't mind that.
That would have been better.
Yeah, because
then you Shepherd.
Yeah. And then Shepherd also would have been like, "Ew, do I have like Collier STDs now or what?"
AIDS.
You got a touch of DNA in you, mate.
Suddenly, he just starts getting acne and just like scars on his face and stuff.
Walks around a little bit of a beer belly.
Yeah,
Old Man Beer Belly.
Did that belt appear out of nowhere? He had a green belt in the shootout.
Oh, really?
With the holster. And I can't remember if that was earlier, because it's like very, doesn't look at all like his uniform.
Right.
And like, I know that when the fake Raiders first showed up and they were holding up a gun and all that, and I'm like, okay, it's like pistol-esque, but it's not quite.
Is it the round one? Oh, no, that was one that Collier shot him with later, or tried to shoot him with later. Oh, and that was the other thing too that didn't really have any resolution is, Collier, like, when Ponytail failed, Collier just, like, pulled out his gun to shoot him and clicked as if it was empty. And Ponytail took that as, oh, thank you for sparing my life. And then once he walks away, Collier goes, I'll get this gun fixed. And I was like, I almost would have liked it if those other Genii were, like, turned to our side or something like that. And they turned against Collier as well when the townspeople did. Because even, like you were saying before, Mitch, like, the rousing thing of, you know, the town standing up for themselves didn't really go anywhere either in the end. Like, they all came out and went, we're going to stand up for it. And they all just pointed guns at them and went, put your stupid frigging pitchforks down.
Yeah.
And then John and Collier had their one-on-one and then it was over.
Yeah.
So even that didn't really go anywhere either. It was just a lot of weird little vignettes of scenes that just didn't really all go together.
So is he carrying around an earth gun? Is that what Collier's? Because, like,
no,
that's the gun that he was holding in the shootout, about to draw.
Interesting.
And that's an earthbound prop.
Something you'd see Daniel Jackson wearing. Yeah.
And I was like a bit disappointed when I see shit like that. Like, it's one thing that you've got a holster that's exactly the right size pistol.
He was wearing it the whole time.
Wow.
It's like SG-1 green.
The gun that he shot Ponytail with was almost like a seated weapon. It was kind of had that round, the big round thing with, you know, the little handguns, and that's definitely not that gun. So yeah, you're right. That was another lame thing they did in this episode.
Sorry, I'm still
great to have Richard Kind back, but
yeah,
I love Richard Kind. I just think it was too soon for him, and you don't put Collier and Richard Kind in an episode together unless you're gonna do a segment before and just have Collier become fascinated with him, or, you know, or confused by him, or frustrated with him. But I think Collier Robert Darby just played Collier as Collier.
Yeah.
And didn't really see Lucius as, I think, the roadblock that he could have been.
Yeah.
Imagine if Lucius was the one that kept getting, like, imagine if there was five instances during this whole episode where John was going to die. Like, Collier had won. He had the bullet ready to go, shot it at John's, and Lucius was the one that stepped in to save it. And it's like, imagine if Lucius kept getting in the way of Collier, you know, killing John. And the frustration that would have built up there because Collier couldn't do anything to Lucius. Like, that would have been, I think, more interesting.
I think, were they trying to make him like an Ergo or a Come Tryer boy? Because it was like, obviously, that he doesn't come back, right? We never see him, Lucius.
No, this
again.
Is it. This is it for Collier and this is it for Lucius. Done and dusted.
And it just seems like, I wish Atlantis did more of what SG-1 did in the early days. Like, to me, Genii is similar to the NID, like, just who cares, bad guy. And then they've got the Wraith, which is awesome, similar to the Goa'uld. But then they've got the Replicators. It's like, why can't you just find a different synthetic robot people?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different galaxy. And then just be like,
imagine if it was a bunch of Reese's, you know what I mean? And we, when we and Reese, like the robot yeah. that Reese was, imagine if she originated from the Atlantis galaxy or something yeah. like that, and we found her people, and yeah. we explored more of her origins versus these Atlantis human form replicators.
Because it's like I feel like they got rid of the replicators beautifully in SG-1. They didn't need to bring them back.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess the one thing I'll give to all the writers and stuff, it's like, well, they've been ending the show since like season 6, you know? So I guess they were getting to a certain point. They're like, we've just been renewed for another season. What?
We've
just killed off all our bad guys. Yeah. What are we, you know?
Is it worth trying to create something else that might have longevity?
Still go back to Bad Guy of the Week like SG-1 was originally.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
At least at first. Because some of those early SG-1s are so good, man.
Yeah,
And they're just
Demons,
great.
Really trying to be
Thor's Hammer.
Just a little standalone.
Tin Man. Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah.
I couldn't leave without give you guys this. I had a look at the IMDb reviews for this episode.
Oh,
scathing, scathing. So many one stars, stars, three stars. My favorite
one. I didn't
think
it was that bad, to be really honest.
My favorite one goes one, same story over and over. My God, these writers are horrible. Wow. That sentence covered it all but was too short, so I added this sentence. Hope it makes it long enough. Yeah, it did.
Did you write those?
Get into Gate, Stargate podcast. Get into it now before it's too late.